Diaries of a Dyke.
Hi, how are ya? I thought you were going to wear your pajamas.
I was going to, but do you know what? It's a really interesting thing for me because I do sometimes dress quite sexy and sometimes like an absolute hobo and I embrace it all. But with this new job, I found that really hard to meet in the middle of like my professional life, my sexual life. So I've decided to go with like a little bit of sexy but total profesh with my jacket.
Well, I'm actually, do you know what? Because when you said I'm just going to wear my pajamas, I was going to come in my pajamas. So how embarrassing would that have been if I was like, so I was like, oh shit, you did me good.
It would have been awesome. I mean, I've still got my slippers on, so.
I've actually got no pants on, so.
I don't believe it. I'll have to see it.
I'll show you. Look at this. Like, here's Mondays. How are you, babe? How you going?
Yeah, I'm a little bit hungover, actually. I got excited. I haven't drank for like 3 months. And then after Radio Awards yesterday, I cracked the bubble, so.
Oh, you know what? Well deserved. Well bloody deserved. I actually was going to reschedule with you because after I heard that you had the win last night, I was like, oh, she's going to be a bit dusty this morning. But I was desperate to get you on the podcast. So I was like, if anyone can do it, it's Morgs.
Oh, you're a darling. Look, I had a big slab of lasagna with a poached egg on top, and I am right as rain, so.
Oh, geez, no, I think I've ever tried that before. That sounds like one of those, like, intoxicated food thoughts. Where you're like, this sounds good. I'll just chuck everything in a bowl and eat it.
It was pretty much like that. But
yeah, but congratulations on the win. What was it? Best Entertainment Podcast, wasn't it? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Thank you. I know. I was so stoked, and I guess, like, bigger picture for me, it just feels like if a podcast like that and like the podcast that you're doing can be held in high regard and win an award like that sort of in that public eye, it's a real sign of the times to me that like we're coming into a level of more progression and we are ready to be learning and hearing and opening up these conversations. So for me, it's like a real win for humanity. Like, I'm bloody pumped.
Yeah. If you're listening, Morgs does a podcast with Sharon Casey, who is another amazing human being. It's called The Trainee Sexologist, if you want to check it out. And that's actually your training bit of your sexologist part, isn't it? So if you do want to check out any of that, you can go and do it. And they won best bloody podcast, so you know it's going to be good. I don't even know where to start because, I mean, I met Morgs through radio. We used to work together at MediaWorks. And, oh, honestly, there's no one like you, Morgs. There really isn't. There's no one as crazy, as open, as beautiful, as loving, as so, like, your aura is just so welcoming. And, you know, if there's one person in the world that was going to say, I'm leaving radio and I'm going to be a sexologist, it would be you. I don't think anyone was really that surprised, were they?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I can't believe they paid me for so many years to work in radio when I was actually sitting in the office counselling everybody and talking about sex and helping people unravel their sex lives. And it was like, yeah, it was pretty I mean, I loved radio. I loved because I was allowed to be creative and weird and wild. And all the people that are there, like yourself, were very open. And we're all kind of cut from the same cloth, really, I think. So
bloody weird. You have to be at least weird in your own way to be in that kind of industry, 100%. Oh,
absolutely.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, like where you grew up, your upbringing, how you got into radio and that kind of stuff, and then we'll get onto the sexologist and the juicy talks.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Opotiki, was kind of my grounding, my childhood in the East Coast. And that gave me a very grounded, humble upbringing with my mum, solo mother. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a big discussion with a friend the other day about this. And you know, we came from no money at all. And I just think that the friends that I've got that have had a similar kind of upbringing, that haven't been able to rely on parents for handouts or money or a room to go back to live if shit hit the fan, really puts a rocket up your bum to work hard, to make your own money, to survive in the world. And I think that's really made me hungry for success. And and a love of women and strong women, you know, that have had a bloody hard time really throughout the ages to kind of get to this freedom point that we're at now. My mum realised that Porikei was too small for me. As you kind of mentioned, I'm a bit wild, and that was starting to show by the time I was doing lots of acting classes and wanting to be on stage. And so she knew she had to get me to a bigger city. So we moved to Nelson, which was very white and shocking to my very like heavy Māori friend upbringing, cultural immersion life that I'd been living down there.
So is
mum
Māori?
No, my mum and dad are both Pākehā, but okay. Growing up I was pretty much the only sort of Pākehā friend in my mix. I didn't really know any different. Like, it was never highlighted, it just wasn't a thing. So, you know, just grew up with the tikanga of the place, and you know, you just, yeah, it's kind of come with me the whole way through, which has been really nice.
What took your parents to Porikei then, or your mum in particular? Was there any family and stuff there, or?
No, I believe that when, like, mum has said this to me, when her and dad broke up, she literally wanted to get away from her as far away as she could. So she literally, he's in the Nakhi, and she just literally went on the other side to the other knob on the east coast.
I'm going to go as far as I can from you, mate. Then she went up to Porikei.
Yeah. So that's where she ended up, but she knew nobody there.
Wow, brave.
It was wild. Very brave. I met a guy on the beach in Nelson, actually, who was giving away free stuff from a radio station, and I was like, is this a job? He was like, yeah. And I was like, that's so cool. And he was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, famous on TV or something. And so he said, oh, lots of people start in radio and move on to TV. Come and hang out at the radio station and see if you like it. And I just remember walking around this home. It was a big old house, big old villa, five-share house in Nelson. And I just could not believe that people went to this place every day and made magic happen. And I was like, that is for me. So it turns out that guy was a total creep and was actually grooming me as a young 14, 15 year old.
Gosh. Jeez. Okay. Wait, did he actually work in radio, or?
He did. He was the promotions manager. Yeah.
We won't mention what radio station that was in.
No. radio is really all I've ever known. For 15 years, that's the career I've chosen, and I've done different work in different departments, and then like I was sort of saying, was I spent a lot of my time talking to people and counselling them and just openly taking away the taboo of sex, and I mean, I was farting in the office, I was all getting everyone to do squat o'clock at 3 o'clock, and I'd take my pants off for it. I mean, it was just wild in there. I just kind of gave people permission to just be wild and be themselves. And I was so surprised everybody would get on board with it, you know? But I guess I never felt fully fulfilled in that radio job. I loved it. I could have easily just done it as like, great, it's my day job, go home, live my life. But I felt like I wasn't really in service to the world. I wasn't actually giving back. I wasn't, you know, there was more to it, you know, that I thought I could be doing. And then when I didn't even know there was a job like a sexologist.
Neither.
And then when I found out there was, I was like, this is incredible. But it's all quite clinical. If you're just go from a psychologist and then you do a sexologist degree. So I kept on looking, and there's actually what I ended up studying in was to become a somatic sexologist, which means that you also work hands-on with the body, if appropriate. So you're really working with like rewiring the brain, neurological pathways, the nervous system. It's a lot more integrated. And I actually think, you know, we're just not as embodied as we should be. And so this kind of work really drops you and brings you home to your body. So yeah, it's beautiful. And then so yeah, I just jumped in after 15 years of radio, threw that out. This is for me, I'm off.
Yeah, because when you said you were like, I'm gonna be a sexologist, I honestly was like, did she make that up? Like, is that? I've never heard of that in my whole life. But in saying that, isn't that sad? Because nobody knows that they exist. And I feel like it's so important. Like, sex is so bloody important. Well, this is a personal belief, you know. The physical is just as important as everything else. But with the physical comes the mental and the spiritual and all that kind of stuff. So now you're a qualified, sorry, what was the word you used before the sex?
Somatic, which means in the body, yeah.
So are there different types of sexologists?
Yeah, there's only really two at the moment, but this is, I guess, an evolving field as people are becoming more and more open to it and wanting to delve into their bodies in a sexual way. So there is just the main sexologist, which is the traditional way, which you would go and you would sit and you would just talk.
Oh, okay.
The somatic sexologist, where with me you could come and you could just talk, or we could move it to the body.
Okay, so let's talk. What do you mean, like, move it to the body? What does that mean? Could you give like a wee example?
Yeah. So I found your last podcast episode very beautiful and raw, and I just do want to really acknowledge your bravery, the way you showed up. It was really special and really, I think, such a gift for other people to see you being
okay,
like
look,
that.
I've been crying for the last 2 days. You can't get me worked up, all right? But I appreciate you and thank you so much. But I'm just gonna. Okay. I'm so bloody emotional from it all.
Oh, darling.
I didn't expect the response. I honestly didn't. You know me, Morgs. Like, I'm an open book. Like, I wanted people to feel safe and, you know, like, I guess normal for lack of a better word. But the response I got back, I was just like, shit, there are a lot of people out there that are feeling the same. And so yeah, thank you.
Totally. Well, you're welcome. And I want to thank you, because that's the thing, it is another piece of giving people permission. You know, we're sick of seeing perfection. That's not what life's about, you know. And when we see someone else be raw and vulnerable, we all go, oh god, it's actually okay to be like that. So yeah, and one of the beautiful things that you shared was about numbing out, and you were numbing out the emotional body but also the physical. And that's very common. A lot of us are walking around and we're not aware, we're not feeling the temperature of the air on our skin. When we have a shower, we don't feel the pleasure of that trickling water on our bodies. And that was one of my biggest sort of pieces of work, is that I see that we are numbed out, and we're numbed out in our genitals. And so the work that I can do on a body level is bring the awareness and rewire the nervous system to feel again. And so one of the things, for example, that I could do, say if a vulva owner came to me and said that they were numb and they couldn't really feel anything in their genitals, which is really common, what I would recommend is a yoni mapping, which yoni is another, it's an old Indian Sanskrit word for vulva, the vulva area.
I didn't know that. Good to know.
And when we do the mapping, we are bringing the awareness of the brain and the touch on different bits. And it's like telling a story again. So like, this is my vulva.
Oh, you've come prepared.
Well, I'm an educator.
If you're not watching the video and you're listening, she's just pulled up a wee, what would you call that, Morgs?
Well, it's a vulva cushion, so we've got the big puffy outer labia here.
I'm going to blow take a photo of this.
We've got the inner labia here.
Okay, thank you, because I really wanted to, sorry, I wasn't concentrating. One more time.
Okay, so this is the outer labia, which has got a lot of erectile tissue underneath it, which puffs up when it's engorged, when we get aroused. Mm-hmm. And underneath here, we've got the clitoral legs and we've got vestibular bulbs, and they all puff up and add to the engorgement that happens in this area. And we've got our inner labia. So if I'm mapping a vulva, I will be slowly touching, or I'll be encouraging my client to touch themselves here while I tell that person what's underneath it, what can they feel on a scale of 1 to 5, what can they feel. And if they feel nothing, that's fine, but the other side could be completely different. you know? And if people do find areas of numbness, we just sit with it, we notice and allow. And I've just, it will sound strange, but I have held different bits of a woman's labia or bits, and they've just cried because it's like a reconnection with themselves, you know? So it's really powerful work. And I mean, it's pretty confronting as well. If you haven't looked at yourself in the mirror and seen your bits, some woman that's been their first time looking with me, you know, in the mirror, and just witnessing is a really powerful thing as well. So yeah, it just seems strange that, you know, we go for a massage or we do different things with our bodies, but we always exclude the genitals. And to me, that's sort of perpetuating the shame and the guilt and society's spin on us that that's naughty and bad and keep it hidden and don't touch that, that's bad. So yeah, it's about bringing it back to life and integrating it with the whole body.
So do you just kind of guide them and teach them about their parts, and does it ever end in climax or...?
No, so there's communication the whole way through. So when I'm working like that, say with a vulva, it's pleasure is so welcomed, you know, but it is not necessary, and we take away any kind of agendered touch. Orgasm's not a goal, but it's welcome, you know, but there has to be communication around it so that we both feel safe and that it's appropriate. And yeah, and that's kind of a little bit why, like, during my training, you know, I had to do everything, like learning about anal massage, and so I did that with like men and working with the prostate and seeing their arousal, yeah, and them wanting to really like ejaculate, because it was like,
yeah,
we're not taught how to hold on to sexual energy. We get a build up and we want a release, yeah, and I just don't feel really as safe working with men as I do with women in that regard to arousal and orgasm. Okay. So
why is that?
I'm not quite sure yet, and I guess it's still a line of inquiry that I'm going down. I want to support men and hold space for them, but I'm not sure. It's a bit dodgy for me. It's a little bit unclear.
Is that because of like society ways, or, you know, how like some men are portrayed when it comes to sex, or is it preference that you're like, oh, I know what vaginas are about, but penises are a whole different ballgame. Like, I need to do more study on that before I get to you guys.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that, the societal thing, I think. And I hate to be a little bit broad and judgy about this, but I do feel in some regard that women are a bit more evolved in terms of boundaries in the sexual sphere, boundaries and safety. And I don't know if it's because of my personal experience with men where boundaries have been pushed or taken advantage of, that I've acted as a personal thing, or if I don't trust that men can control themselves, which is a horrible thing, really, because there are some really beautiful, amazing, evolved men out there that need some good sexual help. But yeah, I'm still figuring it out.
And you need to make sure that you feel safe. You know, you're giving so much of your energy as well, so you want to put that into people that are genuinely going to take care of that and appreciate you for that, because it's a big thing that you're doing.
Yes, it's sacred work. Yeah,
100%. Can we go back quickly to the guys and how you said you did the anal massages? Because I heard you talking about it on the training sexologist, and oh my god, I was just, do you know what? I guess you hear it and you're like, ah, ha, 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 but then you get so intrigued about it. And I personally didn't even know this, but the G-spot is in the male anus, isn't it?
Correct. Yes, that's the prostate.
The prostate. So could you explain the anal massage to us?
Yeah.
Who volunteers to do this kind of stuff? Like, the students will take turns. How do you find people that are keen for you to, I guess, stick your fingers up their anus massage? Like, how can you come across those people?
Well, okay, where do I start? So the whole premise, like, honestly, when I started seeing the course outline and I saw this anal massage, I was like, oh my, I can't do this. And it had to start with me doing it to myself. And wow. Well, you know, I started masturbating quite young, as you know, as a kid, and so I feel like I know how to touch myself, and I knew my vulva quite well, but I had never explored that area. I've never had anal sex with like a penis or with a finger or anything else, actually. Mm-hmm. And so even doing that for the first time was really pushed my boundaries, but I actually liked it. It was strange. I was like, this is kind of good. And one of my teachers on the course, Jack Moran, he is the biggest advocate for anal massage and thinks that it can heal things like fissures and hemorrhoids. Wow. And because you're touching soft tissue when you're in the anus, it is the easiest way to touch the nervous system that we can't touch on the outside. The only other way is to go in through the mouth and down that way. And you know, our nervous system, we're living in a society where we're all stressed out and we're on edge like this. And what we really need for our nervous systems, for our thyroid, is to actually be calm. And when you go in there and just stroke around and be explorative and loving to your asshole, it relaxes the nervous system. And so, I mean, it kind of, you know, I was reading all this, I was like, oh yeah, this kind of makes sense, but aren't there other ways to relax, you know? Sure. But then when I had to move on and give it to other humans, I saw that, wow, they were so relaxed and they loved it. And they hadn't, I mean, this one guy, okay, so yes, it was really hard to get volunteers for this.
So you had to find the volunteers for your course.
I did.
You do call up a mate and be like, hey, can I massage your anus? Like, how does that even bloody go?
It was a bit like that. I had asked a few of my male friends,
yeah,
and they were like, we really want to help you out, Morgs, but I just don't think it's for me. I mean, they were worried about arousal. They were worried about the unknown, poo, yeah, all sorts of stuff, you know? Mm. And I was having coffee with a girlfriend and I said, oh, I think I'm going to fail this module. I can't find any man that's going to let me in his goddamn anus. And she goes, oh, my husband will do it. I said, no, you can't just make him do that. She's like, oh, yes, I will. And I was like, mate, I'm all about consent here. You can't just be putting his butt on the line for me. Yeah, and anyway, she goes, she went outside, made a call, came back. She goes, oh, yeah, he'll do it. I was like, are you serious? She was like, yeah, he's up for it. So
wow. I
went around to their house that night and did it. So
okay.
He was out in the lounge watching the Kardashians.
She was in the lounge and then you and him went into the room. And
yeah.
What? Oh, wow. They must be very open-minded people. Shout out to them. That's pretty damn cool. They know that they're ideally just helping you out past your sexologist course.
Absolutely. So. And I'm so grateful, you know, like, oh, friends.
Was it awkward at all? Like, what do you say? Hey, could you bend over on the bed and I'll just do my thing? Because you're learning as well, you know, so you must have been bloody nervous.
I was, and I was clunky, you know. I'm like, okay, cool, you know. So he was lying face down on the bed and I'd be like, and I could tell he was nervous because his legs were tight together and I was like, can you just open wide a bit more, and I think he didn't want me to see his balls from the underside. Oh. And you know, well, it was hard.
Did you know him very well? Or
yeah, I did, but the thing is, like, he's like the loveliest guy. He's pretty quiet. He only speaks if he's got a really important message. Oh, so wow. I was really, really honored and shocked that he was up for it, you know.
Okay.
Amazing.
So that was just one of the things that you had to do to train to be a sexologist. Was that probably the most uncomfortable thing for you, part of it?
Definitely. It was just so foreign for me. And it was foreign that I would be so intimate with another body, a human body, that I'm not actually sexually intimate with. It was a very big learning and a difference for my brain to work out that I could be looking at a man's body and rubbing his booty and about to enter and I didn't want to kiss him or,
yeah,
you know, it was strange. It was hard for me to get my head around.
Did you ever, like, sometime through the course be like, oh, I don't know if this is for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because there were different people on my course that, seemed way more advanced in the advanced in that realm. You know, people that have been sex workers, people that, had been working as psychologists and trauma, people with trauma, and people that were nudists. So people that were really comfortable in their own bodies already, or had been working a lot in that kind of a roundabout body field. And I just thought, shit, these guys, man, they can just do it all. And they seem to be writing up their assignments like, oh, it was great, it was easy, it was blah, blah. And I'm there pouring my heart out about how hard this was for me. And I guess one of the big things that was like the difference with getting my brain around things, we had to do an exercise of witnessing someone masturbating, and then you get witnessed masturbating as well. And I mean, I've done that like once with a partner, but it was very much like on show. You know, I was trying to look sexy. I was making noises that weren't really like what was feeling good for me.
Like porno, that's right.
Totally. Mm. A little porno show. And so to actually be witnessed when you're really actually raw like an animal, masturbating as if no one's watching you, it just strips back the layers, man. I was a new person the next day.
I don't know if I could even climax or anything doing that. So was it another student that was watching you?
It was actually my partner at the time.
Oh, okay. But,
so yes, so that I think that made it easier. But also it took us to a different level of intimacy, because you know, when you're sort of having partnered sex with somebody, you're so connected. You're not really worried about how you look. You're looking at them. He was like off to the side. We weren't making eye contact. Yeah. It was really hard.
Did he like it?
He did. Of course, he wanted to jump on top afterwards. Yeah. And that was not the rule. And also, you're right, it was hard to climax, and I didn't climax, and that wasn't the goal either. It really just had, like, I've had such a shift on masturbation and taking away the goal of orgasm for it. So you can just have a pleasure session with yourself and it's not about the orgasm, you know?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on masturbation?
Oh my God, I think it's amazing. I think everybody should be doing it every day. And but I think we probably all need a rewiring of it, because most of us masturbate now how we did when we first started masturbating. Because what happens is that you find what feels good and your brain makes a connection. You do it 3 or 4, 5, 10 times. Got it. That's the quickest way for me to feel, get what I need. You find ways of self-soothing. I can't sleep, I'm going to do that. Or destructive ways, you know, I'm just like, I'm bored, I'm just going to bang one out. And actually, it's almost what I've seen and what I believe is that we've actually neglected the rest of the body in masturbation. It's pretty genital focused. And so we miss out on full body orgasms if we're lucky enough to be orgasming when we masturbate. And it becomes this like build up in the genitals, and then pooh, jump off the cliff. And then it's like, oh, so intense, and then it's over.
Yeah.
Instead of what I've seen and learnt that we can do is actually like cultivate that sexual energy, and through breath work and integrating the whole body, yeah, you can have the buzzing everywhere, and it's more expansive, the orgasms, it's more rolling, it's well, God damn, I love it a lot more. Let me just tell you, it's changed my life, you know?
Well, you're right. Like, I guess most people start masturbating at a young age, you know, when you're like teenagers and you go through puberty and you're like, oh God, this feels amazing. And then you take it into your adulthood, and because it's what you know, it's what you like. And humans like a quick fix, you know, we're lazy. We don't want to explore. Whatever feels good, feels good. And I've found that personally, I took that into my relationships. Like, I was like, oh, this is what I like, you know, can we do this? But in doing so, I was restricting my pleasures. Like, you just have to be able, you know, and they'd be like, oh, what if I do this? I'm like, no, I know what I like. But really, in doing so, you're forgetting about everything else.
It's a very common thing. I mean, the thing is, okay, so I've actually got my little clitoris here. I don't know if you can actually see this. but you can only see the little gland. And then it's got the hood that goes over top of this shaft. Wow. And then we've got this little button. And so when people talk about, you know, I can only come through clitoral stimulation, it's like, of course, we have been given an organ that is purely for pleasure. There is no other job for the clitoris, right? And we've almost been shamed as women if we can't orgasm through internal vaginal penetration, which in my thoughts is just a crock of shit, because if you give time for this clitoris to become engorged, like I was showing you with the vulva, it takes a vulva owner 45 minutes on average to fully engorge and become fully aroused in this area. And when that happens,
that's quite a long time.
It is. I mean, nobody's really got time for a 45-minute session every time you're going to have sex. But it's an interesting way to explore and do things differently and see what feels differently in there. But once these are fully aroused and engorged, they all puff up. So any kind of stimulation you're having internally, it is still touching and affecting the clitoris. Like, this is an amazing pleasure tool. Like, we should be incorporating it the whole time. That's what feels good. But there is actually some amazing little erogenous zones inside the vagina. And I used to be like this, I know what I like. I'm a clit girl. Yeah. And it wasn't until I started using dildos that I realized that, wow, it's actually a wonderland in there. And so much sensitivity, and it's just, I've woken up that area now, and now penetrative sex with a man is a million times better than it ever has.
And I'm not saying this for every single man in the world, but women, I've talked about this before on the podcast, you know, like woman sex is a whole lot different, because I feel like the goal is to make the other person orgasm, not just yourself.
Right.
Have you experienced that yet?
No. I do you mean with a woman?
Yeah. Have you?
No, but I've always been open to it, because I am open to anything that's going to bring me more pleasure. And I think this is our bodies to learn about and to figure out what we like. It's kind of like, to me, like, yeah, okay, I like chocolate ice cream, but of course I'm going to try boysenberry because I want to taste the full range, you know?
You know, if you won't like it until you try it.
Exactly right. I mean, but the opportunity has never really arisen, and I am very much like a connection with a person, so I think it would be more that than sex, I suppose. I mean, I like a hard dick, just like turns me on so much. But I love being munched out, you know, so I feel like I'd be a great lesbian, you know,
yeah.
But I don't know if I could return the munching favor. I don't know, but I'm into it. I think I don't know.
Do you know what a penis is?
Yeah. I guess, if I was going to put, no, because I guess I haven't really dabbled in that realm. I've only really done men.
Mm.
No, I don't really like labels, to be honest.
I'm not a label person, but I feel like there's a lot of people that come to me and they feel just a whole lot, I guess, more comfortable in their skin if they can say, that's what I am, like, I understand now, you know what I mean? And the pansexual is the most common one that when I tell people, they're like, fuck, that's exactly me. I've been so confused my whole life, I couldn't understand what I was or who I was, and that right there, that pansexual word, is the most common one where people feel like they fit under the category that makes them feel, you know, safe and wanted and needed in the world. So
yeah, and such a beautiful thing if you have felt lost or confused. It gives you a place to identify, and I think it's great.
Oh, I wanted to talk about the sex toy thing as well, because a couple of questions came in kind of around the same wording, but someone said overuse of a Satisfyer Pro, I'm worried the standard oral won't work anymore. Is this a thing? Because we were talking about that, hey?
Yeah, we were talking about that, and it is a thing. And it also goes back to what we were just talking about with the quick fix. And I'm so torn because, yes, I think any way that people, women, can find pleasure should be celebrated and should be done. But there is this risk of numbing out the genitals, and like we were saying about the early ways of masturbating, you're training your brain that that's the best, easiest, quickest way to feel the pleasure. And really, it is dangerous for us coming back to connecting in a partnered way. And we almost then need to do a whole retrain of that area. It's called, can be motor amnesia down there. It becomes numb. Sensory motor amnesia. So how we fix, well, not fix, but how we support that is through sensate focus, where you would literally lay off it for a week and then you would slowly start bringing in your own touch again to get rid of the numbness. And I just think all these buzzing toys, some of them are so magic and that they're doing great things, but they can really do some damage in terms of becoming too reliant on a little tool that's a quick fix and the numbing out of that area.
So what would you say for advice? Would you be like, look, cool, use the sex toys, but just maybe not 10 times a day. Don't just rely on it all the time. Would you say that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wouldn't be reaching for it every time you're going to self-pleasure. And also with sex toys, it's great to incorporate it with partnered sex as well, if you are with somebody. Because I think especially for men that are or dating women, I'm starting to see some insecurities show up ever since the old Satisfyer Pros on the street. Because it's almost like, they feel redundant in a way. Say out of 10 times of masturbating, I would say 3 times use a vibrator, if that's, kind of that kind of rationale. That's what I would work to.
Okay, cool. While we're on the sex toy chat, I want to talk to you about dildos.
Yes.
Because you mentioned about the glass. I've seen them, the glass dildos. But for me, when I hear glass dildos, I think hard, ow, and what the heck happens if that breaks inside me?
Yes. Well, I might just get my crystal one.
Oh, yep. Is it clean?
Yes, it has to be clean is the most important. So this is actually my little one. This is my rose quartz crystal dildo.
Oh wow, it's really a rose quartz.
Yeah, so it's beautiful and it's like weighty and it's nice and smooth.
Whoever came up with that was smart. That does not look like a dildo. You could have them around your house and the people would be like, oh, I love your crystal.
Little face messenger, you know,
multi-purpose.
But it's like, this is so smooth, this is so nice and cool, which is a beautiful sensation if it's going inside the vagina. And you know what, like inside the vagina, it's so durable, it really is. Think about it, babies can come out of there, you know, and so it's not going to do any damage and it just molds into all the nooks and crannies. And yeah, it's a really different sensation from having like rubber in there, and it feels a lot more natural. And and it's very rare. I've never heard of any cases of these like glass or crystal breaking. I'm sure it's possible, but
see, the thing about that, but what you had, it's actually not that big.
No. So for me, I do have a bigger one. It's a big obsidian.
Is that black one?
Yeah. But what I like, because I am quite spiritual as well, I believe that crystals hold an energetic frequency, is that I'm able to, I put it on my heart space first and I set an intention for myself and for my body before I even go near my genitals. And then I'm kind of carrying that in my yoni and having that time. And it's small enough that I can really reach my G-spot when I first enter. I can kind of go in that sort of a upwards motion, hitting my urethral sponge, which is the G-spot.
While we're on that, do all women have a G-spot in the same kind of position?
Yes, queen, we do. It's there's sort of three broken into thirds. As soon as you enter the vagina on the top wall, it's either at the front, right at the front there, or it's in the middle, or at the back. So
three. inside?
There's three places it can be.
Oh, wow. So everyone's different.
And everybody has got one, but it's numb. For a lot of women, it's numb. Mm. So it is about finding it. And a lot, but there's also so much unknown about it. And that's why there's myths about, oh no, people don't have a G-spot. Or, and some people say that the G-spot, you know, it actually is directly hitting up under some bits of the clitoris, so that's what is making it feel good as well. It's still a mystery in there, which is kind of beautiful, which also gives us permission to find the bits that feel good for us. But yeah, after years and years, like probably it was only 2 years ago, I found my G-spot, you know, and that's what I do when I do yoni mapping. I find and help women find their G-spot.
While we're on that, do any of your friends come to you and ask you?
Yes.
Advice?
I have seen and been inside with my fingers probably 10 of my girlfriends.
Wow.
Now throughout my training, yeah, they've been so incredible to let me in there, and I had never seen a vulva up close before I'd done this training, you know. And what I couldn't believe was, you know, from looking at a vulva, you can't see in there, you can't see inside the vagina, and this amazing blind faith of just slipping fingers in was the most beautiful heavenly feeling ever, and not knowing what was going to be in there.
Why do you think I like women, girl? Now I've lost my train of thought. I really wanted to ask you something important.
It'll come back.
What other things can you do to spice things up instead of the normal go-to toys?
It depends what you're doing, but you have to do something different. And so maybe you're not communicating properly about what you really like, or you're not communicating about what you'd like to try differently. I think we can be really scared of offending the other person or implying that things aren't actually good enough. So it really is, it's just a conversation starter. And usually slowing down is one of the first steps, I would say, and then taking away the agenda of an orgasm. It's about bringing curiosity back, and almost like, you know, what somebody liked one day they might not necessarily like the other day, but we assume they do, and we assume that about ourselves. So it's about coming in with curiosity and exploring, like, pretend you've never seen this body before. Explore all the nooks and crannies in a different way, like lick those ears, you know, tug on them.
It might sound dumb in the beginning, but you just never know. Like, the most stupidest thing might turn the other person on. But it's all about, like, communication. Oh my God, here I am talking like I'm a sexologist. You know,
yes.
Communication, right? And I think it's so important, because what happens if you're unhappy in the bedroom, but you're too afraid to tell your partner? Like, it's such a big, important thing, sex life.
And it just builds then. It's harder and harder to talk about the longer you leave it. And then resentment builds, you know? Mm-hmm. And all it could take is, like, doing it in a different part of the house one day. Or, you know, it's just a little shift can really have an overflow of a lot more exploration.
I want to also ask, what are your views on porn? Just because I feel a lot of people get miseducated from porn. And, you know, I know a lot of people watch it to get turned on and to get in the mood, and a lot of couples explore by watching it. But for me personally, I can't get down with it. It's just, it feels like so fake to me. Like, if I'm gonna go and watch it, I'm gonna pick like an amateur video, you know, like it's more realistic. And also what pisses me off is that people's education on lesbian sex is through porn.
Yeah, okay, so I think there's definitely a place for porn, but however, how we consume it is very unhealthy. And yes, what you're talking about with education, unfortunately, it has become a place where a lot of our youth go and get education on sex. And it's a real shame because, well, for one, most of it is, if it's hetero sex that they're watching, it is all about the men being pleasured by the woman. There are a lot of body image issues that arise as well, like labia, that most of them have had labiaplasty, which is meant that they're inner labia, these bits in here.
That's what I was going to talk about. It came back to me.
Ah, perfect. Have been cut off, you know, because it's been deemed by society that to have bigger inner labia than outer labia is not, it's not sexy. It's not the way, which is just not true, because actually that is what most women have.
Mm.
I mean, there's just no right or wrong of what a labia should look like, you know. They're mismatched in size. Some are really big, some are small. It's just, it's the beauty of what we're packing down there. And unfortunately, a lot of these porn stars have had them cut off to be little and petite and all nicely tucked in. And also, I guess what raises alarm bells for me is the violence in porn as well towards women. Mm-hmm. I think they did a study and there was about 80% of the videos actually made of hetero porn there was anger and malice and abuse mm-hmm. used in that porn. So I don't know what that does to our young men growing up, how they think they should be treating women. But there are people out there making ethical porn, which is like really beautiful and a lot more real. And the thing is, like, as humans, we are really curious. This is why we like reality TV so much. We kind of like to be able to spy on other people's lives. And so, of course, we're curious. We want to see other people have sex.
Yeah.
So it should be portrayed real. We should be able to see the real stuff. So this ethical porn that's being made is beautiful. And so there is a real place for it, I think. But, yeah, a lot of the porn that's just coming out is just brutal and not a true depiction of how sex between two people should be.
That is a big thing. A lot of people watch porn and they've got their, what do they call it? I can't think of the other word except for a designer vagina.
Yes, no. The labiaplasty.
The labiaplasty, that's what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you finding it quite interesting how when you were, you know, exploring more vaginas in your business, you were like, wow, there's just so many, like they're all so different and it's bloody okay for them to be different too.
Absolutely. And they're just beautiful. They're like flowers and roses. And I fell in love with them, you know, and I was every time. I was like, this is completely different from mine. This is completely different from the last vulva I was entering. Yeah. And I just wish that there was a place or part of our education that we got to see this body diversity and vulva diversity so that we just, I mean, nobody's nose is exactly the same. Why the hell should we expect our flaps to be exactly the same?
Yeah.
You know?
Penises are different as well. Penises are different. Vaginas are different. Every single person is different. And that's the point. Why would you want to see and be with something that's exactly the same all the time?
It's true, but labiaplasty is like the fastest growing cosmetic operation that's happening at the moment in the Western world. It's shocking. Yeah,
so that's a hard one for me because I want everyone to feel like comfortable in their skin, and you know, I wouldn't be against it because you know that's your own opinion, that's your own body, do what you want with it. But it's just, you know, it's sad the fact that the need that they feel like to be normal, their vaginas have to look like whatever they see elsewhere. You know.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's dangerous, it's not dangerous, but like it takes a long time to heal. It can really desensitize that area because it's actually like labia can feel so beautiful and can be so sensitive. It's just that soft little bit of skin, you know, you can make it come alive with lots of touching. And then I don't know. It makes me sad. I've got a real personal opinion about it, which I'm the same as you. I think people should feel comfortable in their own skin, but I'm just, don't fucking do it, you know?
If you're listening and you think that your vagina is so much different than everyone else, it's probably not. Quickly before you go, I just want to know, have you had your first client yet since becoming qualified?
Yes, I've had a few actually.
Woo-hoo-hoo, exciting. You're loving it?
I love it. I mean, it's just not work for me.
Yeah. Do you feel fulfilled?
Yes, I do. I do. I love it. And I know it's not an ego thing when people are like, oh my God, you've changed my life. But it's like, wow, this person needed this, you know? So yeah, it's great. And I can see it's tangible in my eyes. I can see the difference I'm making. Whereas like with radio, I didn't know what the hell happened after I created my proposal or a campaign went to air, you know?
Yeah. You're seeing the changes. That's so cool, Morg. So proud of you.
No, thank you, darling.
What kind of people can come and see you?
Well, I mean, that's a really interesting thing. And I suppose I haven't got my elevator pitch down yet. Why you'd come and see me, like,
yeah.
But I liken it to, you know, if your car is not running as smoothly as possible, you take it to the mechanics, right? There's no shame. It's like, it's just part of what you do. And I think with sexuality, we haven't prioritized that. We haven't made that something that we look to improve. So I'm an educator first and foremost. So many people do not know much about sex, or they haven't had the right education. So anybody can come and see me and it will be of value to them, because they will get what they're looking for, even if it's just about becoming more embodied in themselves, so they're less numb. About finding new pleasure pathways, learning healthy porn watching. That is something interesting that we touched on, but there is a way to cultivate that. A mismatch in libido with partners, that's a big one. Trying new things. I don't know, there's just lots. I mean, I've been working with lots of hapu women with their bodies, you know, learning that they can actually, whilst they're creating a baby, it's still their body and they still have a right to pleasure. It's not all just about growing this baby. I don't know, it's so big. It's such a big spectrum thing.
Yeah, well, that's the point, because it's so big. I feel like a lot of people will be like, oh, when is the right time to go and see a sexologist? Why would I even see a sexologist? And especially after, you know, I'm posting that yesterday on Instagram, a lot of people were like, oh, I didn't even know there was such thing as a sexologist. So it's so important to kind of talk about how, you know, the importance of having you, and that people can actually come to you for absolutely anything. It doesn't even have to be to do with sex.
Totally.
Do you want to say where people can reach out to you?
Yeah, well, my website is currently in the making, so the easiest way would just be on Instagram, which you can find me at Morgan Penn on Instagram.
Yeah, I'll put the tag. I'll tag Morgs in at the end of this video as well.
Oh, beautiful. Well, next time you're in Auckland as well, we'll have to catch up.
Yes, share vagina info.
Yes, we will.
All right. Thanks so much for being on here, Hannah. Really appreciate it. And congratulations on the qualification and finally feeling fulfilled. That's awesome.
Thank you, darling. It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. See you soon, eh?
Bye, darling.
Mwah. Love and light.